me better. And so I have a few things to tell you. The first thing to tell you, as some of you who were just talking about this table, is I love ice cream. Ice cream is my downfall, and if I could, I would eat it every night. Sometimes I do. And I don't like to exercise. We were just talking about exercise, and I do, though. I exercise every day, but I don't like it. And so I don't want you to think that this is in any way easy, what we're going to talk about. It's not that we do this because we think it's easy not to eat ice cream, or we think it's easy to exercise every day. It's not. But we like the way it makes us feel, and we know it's not easy to do the things that we're talking about. But we're going to tell you what we've learned over the years and what keeps us motivated to exercise when we don't want to, and to say no to ice cream, or at least cut the portion in half. Okay, so we're going to talk about what is prediabetes, what are some of the common symptoms, and then why you want to prevent diabetes. Just to give you some overview, and that I'll talk about. And then we're going to pass it over to Kelly, and she's going to talk about strategies to work on to help your blood sugars from going up any higher. And so if you go to the second page, I want to tell you first how your body is supposed to work, as opposed to what happens as you either get older or start to develop diabetes. Because diabetes often comes with age. And we're talking about type 2 diabetes, not type 1.
What's the difference?
Great question. So type 1 diabetes is a condition that usually occurs in children and young adults in which the body attacks itself. So it's considered autoimmune disease. So the thought is that your body gets a virus that looks like your pancreas, and so then you start attacking your pancreas because you think it's that abnormal virus, and your pancreas can no longer make insulin. And so when your body doesn't make insulin, those patients have to be on insulin. They can't be on any pills. So that's type 1. And then type 2 is what we're going to talk about now. And so normally, when you eat food, you put some food, say ice cream, into your stomach, and your stomach absorbs the carbohydrates, and it brings the sugar, we'll speak specifically about the sugar, into the bloodstream. And then your body makes these molecules called incretins. And incretins say, hey, pancreas, I want you to make insulin. So the pancreas makes insulin, and the insulin attaches to the sugar in the bloodstream, and it moves the sugar, from the bloodstream into various cells. So when the sugar gets into the muscles, it turns it into energy, and it stores it for later in a form called glucagon. If the cell that takes in the glucose and insulin is a liver cell, it stores it as glycogen for later. If it's stored in a fat cell, it turns it into fatty acids. So this is how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to take this sugar in and use it as energy, and if you don't need the energy now, you can store it for later, for when you're going to exercise. Make sense? Now, if you go to the next page, which is page 3, is what happens once your body starts to develop prediabetes. All the things that stop working. So you eat that ice cream, and your body still absorbs that sugar into the bloodstream. But those molecules that we talked about, those incretins, they don't work as well. So they don't tell the pancreas to secrete enough insulin. So you don't make enough insulin. And then when your body does make insulin, it holds on to that blood sugar, and it has trouble getting it into the cells because your body starts to get used to having more sugar around, so it's harder for it to pull the sugar into the blood cells. And if it can't pull the sugar into the blood cells, you end up having more sugar in your bloodstream and higher blood sugar. Now, what happens if you can't get sugar into your muscles? You have no energy in your muscles, right? And if you can't get this sugar into your muscles, and into your liver, and into your fat cells, then you can't And so we were joking because I had this wonderful picture of Voodoo Donuts in here. Because one of the worst things about high sugars is that your appetite actually goes up. Because your body says, I have no stores of sugar, therefore I must be depleted and I need to eat more donuts. And people start to crave more sugar as they get older, as they have more type 2 diabetes, which was a question that came up before. I think this one's mine. I thought it is now. So people you know that have high blood sugar, what are they complaining about? Fatigue. So that's one of them, because they're not storing the energy.
Weight gain,
absolutely. So this goes back to, right, the fact that when your blood sugars are high, it actually makes your appetite go up. And so people have a higher desire to eat, so they get more calories in. What else?
Thirsty,
yeah. As your blood sugars go up, people get more thirsty. Because when your blood has a lot of sugar in it, you want to dilute that out, and so your body gets thirsty because it wants to dilute out all the sugar. And then, so after you drink all this water, then you have to pee it out. So people pee more, they get really thirsty, and that's often the first sign of diabetes. They often get hungry, which we talked about, fatigue, we talked about, blurry vision can happen. And then there are some other things, wounds that don't heal. Other things that people don't talk about sometimes, that skin around their neck can get darker, or under their arms. You can get fungal rashes, and they're never in convenient places. They're almost always in the groin area. And you can get pain and tingling in your feet from high sugars.
Could this be, I've been trying to figure out what this is. A smell.
That is not what this is.
What is that?
So, this could be exposure in your lifetime to heavy metals.
Oh.
Or it could just be
exposure
to diabetes. Most people, though, have no symptoms, which is why we stick you with needles and check your blood all the time. Because most people don't have symptoms. We want to catch this as early as we can. And if you go to the top of page 5, there's this continuum between normal blood sugars, and then pre-diabetes, which can either be a fasting glucose of 110 to 125, or a hemoglobin A1C of 5.7 to 6.4. And then diabetes, there's a mistype here, is either a fasting glucose of more than 125 or a hemoglobin A1C of greater than 6.4. So do you guys know what a hemoglobin A1C actually is? It tells us what your blood sugars have been for the last 3 months. So if you decide to cheat, and you decide that the week before you're going to come see us, that you're going to eat no sugar, so that your labs are perfect, it's not going to work. We have a test like that for alcohol, too. It tells us how much alcohol or how much sugar you've been eating for the last 3 months.
So my sister pricks her finger every day for her blood sugars. Where do you get those things?
That's a fasting blood sugar, and those monitors you can buy at Walgreens.
Would that help us?
That would tell you if you'd want to do a fasting, and that would tell you if you're in the pre-diabetes or the diabetes range.
So it would tell you blood sugar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And then, and this is really continuum. So it's not like if your blood sugar is 125 today versus 126, that's not that much different. But we had to make a cutoff somewhere. So we want you as close to normal as possible. In our mind, 125 and 126, we still want you to be practicing healthy lifestyle, because I want you as close to normal as possible. So we saw a guy the other day, and I told him I was going to use him as a poster child. And I was hoping he was going to say, please do use my name, but he didn't say that, so I can't. But anyway, he came into our office, and he had full-blown type 2 diabetes. He lost 50 pounds. He is no longer a diabetic. He's not a pre-diabetic. He is not a, might be a diabetic. He is no longer a diabetic. So, the things that we're going to talk to you about can move you backwards on the scale. This is not an inevitable arrow in this direction. A1C is less than 5.7. And a fasting glucose level will be ideally less than 100, but anything less than 110 is considered normal. And then you want to prevent diabetes because it can cause damage your eyes, cause blindness, dialysis, numbness and tingling in your feet, and affect your blood vessels, heart attacks, strokes. If you go to page six, the question is, can you really prevent diabetes? Now, I told you about this one guy who lost the weight and his diabetes went away. And some people say, well, you know, everybody in my family had diabetes, so I'm going to end up with diabetes as well. And so what's the point of even trying? And so the question is it really genetic? And so they started to say, well, is there a magic gene that causes diabetes? And so they started looking at European descendants first. And they said, let's find the diabetes gene. If you look at this grid, every pink box represents a gene that contributes to diabetes. So there are many, many genes, if you happen to have one or more of them, can increase your risk of diabetes. And then they looked at East Asian populations, which are the green ones. So if you were East Asian and you had one of the green genes, you would be at higher risk for diabetes. But this is not the whole story, right? Just like I told you, there was this gentleman, he lost weight, his diabetes went away. I want to tell you about somebody else. So there's another gentleman who is not David Millman, but coincidentally is named David. And he grew up in a family where everybody ended up with diabetes. And he said, I don't want to get diabetes, because everybody in my family gets diabetes and they lose their toes, and I don't want that to be me. And so he watched his weight, he exercised regularly, and he kept his stress low by keeping his thoughts. So he did all the healthy things that he could possibly do. Did he get diabetes? Yes. So he didn't get diabetes at 40. He got diabetes at 76. And his diabetes is diet controlled and he's not on medication. So by the time he gets a diabetic complication, he will probably be 90. And it probably won't be losing a toe or a foot or anything. So it's not like, so his genes are still there, right? But it doesn't mean that that's his destiny. And the one thing I would say is the one thing that is interesting about genetics and diabetes is if you have diabetes in your family and everybody in your family ends up losing their toes, that's your destiny if you don't take care of yourself, right? And if you're in a family where everybody ends up on dialysis, that's your destiny if you don't take care of yourself. But all of that is avoidable if you take care of yourself. It's interesting how the complications are as genetic as the disease, but it's still preventable, or you can delay it for decades. So that's my story. I think the best way to move on, so most of this can be controlled by lifestyle changes, and so I'm going to move this on to Kelly to talk about lifestyle changes, and since she's a nutritionist, we're going to give her that platform, and I'll pop in because sometimes I can't help myself.
Yeah. Please do. Please do pop in.
So picking up where Jeanette left off and those circles you see that are intersecting, that you have the power, that goes to lifestyle change. So David, the guy that, you know, prolonged his developing diabetes is a perfect example of someone, you know, who incorporated lifestyle to make a difference. And so there are a couple key aspects of lifestyle that we look at as related to all health, really, but specifically the blood sugar balance, and that's the nutrition piece, exercise, sleep, and stress management. And then you could also argue for things like, you know, spending time outdoors and spending time with your family and friends and enjoying people and all of that. But those are the ones I'm going to focus in on for now, and really, nutrition is the biggest piece of that when it comes to blood sugar balance. So that next slide, you know, we're going to dive into some details here, but I want to sort of assure you that we'll come back out of the details and be happy with big picture. So big picture is less sweets, less processed foods, more real food, more whole food, especially a blend of proteins, fat, and fiber. And we'll kind of get to each of those in due time. So, I mean, I could just like end the talk here and we could just drink tea, but we'll dive into the details a little bit more. So this slide with the woman drinking coffee to wake up, you know, Jeanette's already gone through some of these aspects of, she took you through the physiology piece of it, but sort of on a, you know, how you experience high and low blood sugar on a daily basis is some of the symptoms are that if you're really high on your sugars, you're energized. You might be a little bit stressed out, maybe a little anxious, maybe you feel really good. But oftentimes that feeling, you know, goes away as quickly as it arrived. If you're fueling with things like you started your day with, you know, a dry bagel, some orange juice, and some coffee, right? We have very little protein in there, almost none. We have very little in the way of fiber, and we've got a ton of sugar. So that's where we kind of go up and down like this, and the minute that you crash back down, what does your brain say? I want more sugar, right? I need to be stimulated again, or I want more coffee. And so we get into this cycle. The next slide just kind of, you know, recapping here of what we need to reverse that. And you see this curve is a lot, it's just like a nice steady line. And so if you're eating with a more balanced diet, that sense of hunger, it's going to come, but it's not going to be like all of a sudden, you know, you're feeling lightheaded or you're feeling irritable or like, you know, you could eat your own hand, that feeling of, we call hangry, right? If we have enough of fat, fiber, protein on board, that hunger should arrive in a more gentle way. Like, oh, I'm starting to get hungry. I should make myself some lunch, right? So how much is too much? And this is where we're going to dive into a little of the nitty-gritty of sugar. So you can see up here that the American Heart Association says 6 teaspoons or 24 grams should be a daily max for women. And it's 9 teaspoons or 36 grams for men. The World Health Organization does it a little bit differently, but it basically comes out to the same amount. I just want to show everyone what 6 teaspoons of sugar looks like, or 24 grams in a shot glass. But I thought it was a good way to, for everyone to sort of see that quantity. Okay, so they're saying that your maximum of added sugars per day should be no more than this amount. Now they don't really get into what about the sugars that naturally occur in fruit, or the sugars that naturally occur in milk, in wine. We'll get to that because that's a little bit more nuanced, right? And that's more important.